How many of you have pens and paper? You can write something down? Okay, just write something down. That'll work, yep. Technology. Write down first some of your expectations. Just a few of your expectations for your life. What do you expect for your life? What do you expect? What do you? What do you? What do you expect? What do you expect? Doesn't have to be an extensive list, just something. What do you expect? It can be one word, two words, three words. Do I hear four? Four, going on five, five. Yeah. Blue, you don't normally wear blue. That's very nice, Lauren. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What do you expect? Got it? Got what you expect down? Now write what you would wish for your life. What would you wish? What are some of your wishes? That's easier. To write it down? Yeah, that's good. What would you wish? If you don't have anything to write with, just kind of isolate it in your thinking. What you would write down. What do you wish for your life? Got Bibles, Androids, iPhones, some other Galaxy device, or navigate to Matthew chapter 25, if you would. Entrez-vous, monsieur. Matthew 25. This is touching a little bit on, actually it's picking up where we left off last time. Last week we were talking about the marriage feast metaphor, the banquet metaphor of the church, that the church is supposed to be an event as well as an institution and as well as a group. It's an event. It's an ongoing event. It's been a very long feast. It's still only winding up, and it's going to crescendo at the eschaton, which is the last day, the last time, literally the last thing, the eschaton. So this feast is in its long startup, and it's going to culminate at the bridal feast of the Lamb in Revelation. And here's one of the parables that Jesus uses to talk about getting ready for that time. Matthew chapter 25. We're going to pick up here and move a couple of themes. Starting at verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish. The Greek word for fool is moron, by the way. Moron. That's where we get the word moron from. Moron. So 10 of them were morons. In the Greek. Yeah, that's what a fool is. Actually, it's moronic, but, you know, but it, still. So they were fools. Five were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. That's, you got to, got a flashlight? I got no batteries. I got a flashlight, no batteries. That's not too bright. Pardon the pun. Got it? Okay. So, yeah, I was working on that one, huh? You like that? See what I did there? So they took no oil with them, You bring a lamp, you bring no oil. It's very foolish. You ever wonder why they didn't take oil with them? Other than the fact that they're idiots, morons. Why in the world would you take a lamp and no oil? So they just didn't take any oil with them. Why in the world would you forget that? Because they've been drinking. They're going to a party! Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they were distracted by where they were going.
Perhaps.
In a hurry.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny with Wendy's business. You know, Wendy makes these Moses baskets. Okay. She gets urgent orders. Gotta have this basket, the baby's due Saturday. It's like, you've known for 9 months this baby's coming, and suddenly, wow, oh, you know, you're going to a wedding banquet that you've known about for. These people are engaged from the time they're 12. Okay, these parties are years in the planning. And, oh, suddenly, got to hurry out. Got to go run out the door with your lamp. Right there. They're foolish. How ironic that the things that we know are coming, we rarely prepare for. Did I ever tell you about the conversation I had with Irvine? This is totally aside. It's not on my notes. With the Irvine Planning Department? Oh. So we were looking into a building over in Sky Park Circle, and we had to go get a conditional use, start the conditional use permit process thing with Irvine, which was a nightmare. And so we're all at the planning department in Irvine with the clerks talking about, oh, this district and everything's... And they said it was all pre-planned. And I don't know if you remember this, but I said to the clerks, because you know, I'm a troublemaker. What can I say? I said, you got any cemeteries in Irvine? And the clerk looked at the other clerk as though, like I had said, do you have any space stations? She went, well, huh? She looks at me and she goes, I don't know. She, remember this? She looks at the other clerk and she goes, do we have any cemeteries in Irvine? And the other goes, I don't know. And they actually turned and asked their supervisor, do we have any cemeteries in Irvine? The supervisor says, I think there might be a little plot of ground next to the Catholic Church. And I said, Irvine, pre-planned community, right? Planned for all of life, correct? And they said, yeah. I said, except death? Does that... And one kind of laughed and went, huh? Live and work in Irvine? I go, die in Santa Ana, though, right? You know? And she goes, oh, I guess so. Goes, this is the big secret. What, we just ship them all out to Rose Hills in Whittier, you know? No one dies in Irvine. Nothing like that. Yeah. Unprepared. The whole point of this parable is preparation. Let's read on. So they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. All of them. But at midnight, there was a cry. The bridegroom! He has been out partying, by the way. In those days, they would have like the male party and the female party, and those two would have to coordinate. If you want to hear what I believe is a script for a week-long bridal party, read Song of Solomon. It's all the different parties that they have as they go through the week. The coming of the shepherd, and they play all these things out, the barrier between them. Oh, is somebody there? It's really very fun. Read that sometime with that in mind, of a week-long wedding party. Anyway, the bridegroom, come out to meet him. And they come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there won't be enough for us and for you, rather go to the dealers and buy for yourselves at midnight. Anybody ever been in a village at midnight? There's no dealers available. In Santa Ana at midnight, there are dealers available. That's a totally different thing. And while they were going to buy, that's how foolish they are. Oh, okay, we'll go down and see if there's any stores open at midnight. I always wonder, what kind of a journey was that when their lamps were out? Yeah. It's midnight, and you're going to go with no lamp and go walk. It's really a very funny scene. I like Jesus' words. So, and while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins also came, saying, Lord, Lord, open up to us. But he answered, truly, I say to you, I don't know you. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. So the point here is preparedness. To be ready, there's a big difference, by the way, between living as though your boss is going to audit you or check on your work tomorrow and working as though your boss can interrupt you at any moment. How do you act when the boss is going to check on you tomorrow?
I'll get around.
End of the day. Now, if you worked at the places that I worked at before, if the boss is coming tomorrow, today is spent making up for all of the laxity of last week. And you try to fix everything, make it ready, and prepare yourself for the boss to check on it. Look busy. The boss is coming. You know tomorrow you're going to be well-groomed, you're going to be there on time, and everything's going to look in order. But if you change that to where the boss could interrupt you at any time, you keep things right, and you keep frosty. Keep frosty, but keep frosty. You keep everything up to order so you can be checked at any moment. That's what preparedness is all about. This is really severe. He says, I don't know you. Apparently, they were invited. They knew who the groom was, but he says, no, I don't know you. Goodbye. The five wise virgins who brought oil were expecting a feast and planning for it. The five foolish virgins were hoping for a feast, or wishing for a feast, rather. They were just wishing for it. When you look at your lists, when you wish for something, you don't prepare for it. You sit passive and somehow dream that it will happen. Look at your list. What are the wishes? What do you wish for in your life? The things that you wish for, generally speaking, you're in a passive posture. We'll see if it happens. Like having a lamp, but not really preparing the oil. The things that you expect, you prepare for. When you look at your list of expectations, this is what I expect from my life. It's probably something that you're engaged in now that you're trying to push forward in your life. Your hopes are really attached to your expectations, not just your wishes. Your wish list is the stuff that you're passive about. Your expectation list is the stuff you're active about. Now think about that just in your own life. What do you expect between you and God? And what do you wish between you and God? Well, I wish that I'd have this wonderful life with the Lord. I wish that He would meet. I wish that I would be godly. Are you working on it? I'm wishing at it. Do you expect to grow with the Lord? Then you're probably got your nose to the grindstone working at it. That changes things. Now, we frequently use hope ambiguously to talk about our wishing and our expecting. But we should probably use hope about our expectations that we're attending to and preparing for. Now, one of the I'm making the metaphor shift here. One of the metaphors here that's consistent is this whole idea of being a lamp, or having a lamp, or having light. And that's one of the key metaphors of the church. Not only is this is where we kind of find two metaphors of the church overlapping. The church is a banquet for which we're supposed to be prepared, but the church is also a light and a lamp. Go over to John chapter 3. I'm sorry, go to Matthew 5 first. Look at verse 13. It's got the same preparedness and commitment thing going, but it's got two sides of it. It's got the rejection thing going here too. Verse 13, Jesus talking, Sermon on the Mount, the constitution magnum opus for the church. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. Two problems with that. What? It would catch fire. It's just not a very good idea. Or it would snuff the light. Snuff the light. Probably snuff the light before the basket would catch fire, but either one of those. It's both. That's why I say two problems with that. And you don't get any light out of it. You don't light a light to cover it up. Christ does not set the church as a light and then expected it to blend into the world. Ironically, we as Christians try to go camouflage into the world. We try to be non-disruptive, relevant. We're going to go stealth into the world. We try to. Yeah, I'm going to. It's really popular and emerging church kind of stuff. Yeah, I go to the bar. There's a bunch of us Christians, we go to the bar and we hang out, we have beers, we talk about Jesus, and that's our church. No, that's just any Irish pub. That's any Irish pub. They're there drinking beers and they talk about church, which is part of their lives. You go to a secular bar, you're going to hear God talk. Get a couple beers in somebody and they are a philosopher. They'll be talking religion. But this whole idea of we're going to be seamless with the world as we sneak the gospel to them. A spoonful of sugar helps medicine go down or whatever it might be. That's not what Christ said. You don't light a light to cover it up. Christ did not light the church as a light to cover it up and make it not obtrusive. A city set on a hill, it can't be hid. We're not underground church. A lot of people want the church to be underground, you know. We're not underground church. We're a city set on a hill. One of the fun things about sailing from here to Catalina, anybody ever done that? Sail to Catalina? Anybody sail at night to Catalina? Sail at night? Yeah. There's a certain spot about a third of the way across where suddenly you can see Avalon. If it's a clear night. Before that, sometimes you can see this one beacon. It's a radio tower up on the top, up by the airport on top of Catalina. But it's really fun because the curvature of the horizon, Avalon is always, because it's at water level, sea level, you can't see it until you get a third of the way across. And a lot of times at night, we're just sailing, sailing, sailing. And then suddenly, boing, there's Avalon. Before that, though, you can always guide by the airport. Always see the airport up there. You ever hiked, have a mark that you can go to. That's what the church is supposed to be, a mark that people can look at and say, I want to go there. I want to be at that place. It's a haven. It's a rest. It's safety. Driving across the desert at night, right? Dark, dark, dark. And you just long to see, oh, there's, you can see Kingman an hour away. You can see the glow of Kingman on the 40. We're supposed to be that city that someone can look at that's obtrusive, that's obvious, that's not obscure. We don't like that, though. We don't like to be obvious with our Christianity. Why? You tell me. Why is it? What keeps us from being obvious with our Christianity? Fear of being the outcast, of failing, of embarrassing ourselves.
I think sometimes there's a fear of making someone feel bad.
Fear of making someone feel bad?
Right. So there's, you know, because a lot of times there's the excuse, oh, I'm not as good a person as I should be, and stuff like that. So lowering. Yeah. Oh, it's okay.
Yeah. You ever thought about why we don't like to make people feel bad? How do you feel when you make somebody feel bad? Bad. What do you feel about yourself? What? Guilt. Who are we really trying to protect? Who are we really trying to protect when we don't want people to feel bad? Ourselves. We act like it's compassion, but it's actually selfishness. We don't want to feel mean. We don't want to open ourselves up to the accusation that we're mean. What do we do then, usually? Shall we be honest? We hide ourselves, and we try to get professionals to do it for us. We'll maybe sneak somebody to a message that someone else is going to give. Send them to a website. Or hire professionals within the church to be the evangelists. Because that way we can say we participated, but we're not liable for the accusation, the self-accusation that we're mean people. Because, and hear this, most of the energy that people spend in their lives on many, many levels is expended in order to convince ourselves that we're not that which we deeply suspect. Shall I say that again? Most of the energy in our lives is expended in order to convince ourselves that we're not that which we deeply suspect. We suspect that we might be mean because we know how selfish we are, and we know really how arrogant and proud we all are. And so we're going to avoid anything that would confirm that to us. And everybody else knows that. So if we start to talk about God, the easy comeback is, oh, you think you're so much better. And we'll just shut down right there. We'll just shut up and walk away because we're not going to leave ourselves open to that critique. That's the one thing we don't want confirmed to ourselves. So we'd rather kind of push someone else out there to be the mean one, draw back, leave them there like Uriah to take the blow. That way we can say, that person's the mean Christian, I'm the nice Christian. Right? That's what all those books are about. Oh, those mean Christians are out there saying the God thing to all those people and condemning them. I'm the nice kind of Christian. I'm the Christian that everyone should like. I'm perfectly okay with having Christians in Christianity that I can point the finger at and say that they're the mean ones so I can tell myself that I'm the nice one, especially when the world likes me. Jesus says, that is salt that has lost its saltiness. How are we feeling right now? Are we feeling? Okay, good. So I'd rather not be the mean pastor. But I want you guys, and I want us, to walk in truth and light. Turn to John 3 now. This is the parentheses here. John 3. We got John 3:16. We all know that one. That one's awesome, right? I always think it's funny that nobody continues on past that. We'll start at 16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. Everyone's cheering at this point, right? Yeah! Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever doesn't believe is condemned already. Jesus doesn't have to do a thing. You did it to yourself. Jesus doesn't have to condemn the world. The world's condemned itself. It's a little bit like blaming God for judgment is a little bit like blaming a bricklayer when you jump off a building. How dare he put the pavement there? It's that bricklayer's fault that I got hurt when I jumped off the building. Nope. He who doesn't believe is condemned already. Because he's not believed in the name of the only Son of God. And this is the judgment. That light has come into the world, and people love the darkness. By the way, the word is agape there. Love the darkness and hated the light because their deeds were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works should be exposed. But whoever does what is true comes to the light so that it might be clearly seen that his works have been carried out in God. We know that hatred, don't we? Think about the one thing that really bothers you about you. Think about the one, I'm sorry to make you uncomfortable in the church, but think about the one thing that really bothers you about you. Okay? Now think about someone, close friend, spouse, about you. Think about the one thing that really bothers you about you. Now think about somebody, close friend, spouse, someone else, and they come up to you and they say, you know, I wanted to talk to you about, and they start in on that thing. How do you feel? Huh?
Annoyed.
Annoyed. How do you normally react?
Anger, loud.
Anger, loud, defensive, evasive. Okay. And counterattack. Man, just, yeah, let's go for their flaws. Just go right for their flaws. You have a catalog of them on all of your friends anyway, right? Go right for their flaws and start pounding it. We know that hatred of darkness against light. And we don't like it when it points at us. Because we don't want our faults pointed out either, do we? So we're just not going to open up that liability. We know the hate that darkness has against light, and we don't want to be the light that darkness hates. We kind of want the darkness to be okay with us. Go back to Matthew 5. I said that's the parenthesis there. Matthew 5, verse 14. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand. And it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. It's supposed to shine. People are supposed to see how we act and say, that is a religious person. That's got to be God at work in that person's life, because that person is just not normally that way. Now about us, FWC. Oh, it's on. Oh, that's heavy. Oh, you see this light? Yeah. You see it shining right there. You see it? What? I mean, it's on, right? You see it shining right there? But it's on, right? You see it shining right there? What's the problem? There's lots of light there. Our congregation has, are we a big congregation? Are we a strong congregation? Tempered, I would say. Yeah. Durable. Influential. Are we a loud congregation? High visibility congregation? No. Are there other congregations around us that are very high visibility? Yeah. We were, when I was on sick leave back in 1999, 2000, we moved from the Davis Center in the mornings to Prince of Peace in the afternoons. That was a funny shift to come back to. It was really weird for me. I'm like, we're meeting in the afternoons? We're meeting at another church? Why are we meeting at another church? We got in the habit of meeting at other churches. Prince of Peace, Rock Harbor, Soul Survivor. Yep. That was during that period where we had to move the church 4 times in 4 weeks. Yeah. And here we are. Where are we? Ironically. Yeah. Really can't see it up there. A light within a light doesn't do a lot of good. Yeah. Yeah, shine it at that white spot. No, shine it at the white spot. Oh, you see it around it. You see it in the center of it? See that? A light within a light doesn't do much good, does it? Our church isn't supposed to be a light within a light. It's not. It's not a Russian babushka doll, right? It's a baby inside of a baby inside of a baby, right? Yeah. It's time for us to be a light in darkness, not a light inside of a light inside of a light. Turducken, right? A turducken, you know what that is? A chicken inside of a duck inside of a turkey. Turducken? Yeah. Nasty. It's foul. What a poultry excuse for a joke. I'm sorry, I'm just winging it. I'm trying to keep abreast of the conversation. So, yeah. I'll stop. We need not to be a light inside of a light. When we go to Balearic Center, there are hundreds of people that are going to be playing soccer, football, all kinds of AYSO teams and stuff like that out in that park around us. We're not the preschool there that's involved. They have an after-school daycare program at Balearic. Is not a Christian preschool. This is a Christian preschool. That's not. There's people in that neighborhood. I mean, some of them are Christians, I'm sure. But let's find out which ones are and which ones aren't. There's a couple of people that might be Christians there. Iffy. Yeah. Yeah, they're the ones for the intervention after church, yeah. But your neighbors, are your neighbors believers? A couple are. Yeah. Some are, most aren't. Let's go be a light in the darkness. Let's not be a light tucked inside of a light, inside of a church meeting, inside of a Christian preschool, inside of a Christian church. A babushka doll, yeah. Barrel of monkeys. Let's go be a light out there. It's scarier. And we're open to all kinds of accusations of being proselytizing. And people say, are you trying to proselytize me? I'm like, yes, yes, I am. Are you trying to convert me? Yes, yes, desperately. Well, you don't have concern for the problems of the world. You're just trying to get people converted and saved. Yes, yes, I am. You just want to see souls. Yes, yes, that's what I want. I mean, I do care about your hard situation, whatever it might be. Okay? Not anything compared to how I care about your soul. Yes, it's tragic if someone doesn't have diapers. That's a bummer. Although a lot of people throughout history across the world have not used diapers. Okay? Dunk your baby in the river. Right? Yeah, that's irritating and problematic. I really don't care about that as much as I care whether or not you're going to go to hell. And hell is real. I heard somebody say, you only live once. That's right. You only live once. It's for a very long time, and you get to choose your address. It's for a very long time. In fact, it's for eternity, and you get to choose whether or not it's heaven or hell. You only live once, but it's for eternity. Choose wisely. I want to see people get the light of the gospel. I want to see people get saved. I want to see people know where the light is and not to stumble in darkness. People stumbling over the edge. And we're running a hot dog stand. And people are just stumbling over the edge. I want to see that change. I want to see us not so concerned about ourselves and our own pain. But really concerned about someone else's life. A city set on a hill, a light in the darkness. Shall I be Debbie Downer? Can I be Debbie Downer? I'm sorry. As long as we're in the words of Jesus, I'm just going to share some other words of Jesus. To a church. To the angel of the church in Ephesus write, the words of him, this is Jesus, dictating a letter by way of John. To the angel of the church in Ephesus write, the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your toil, and your patient endurance. Wouldn't that be cool to hear from Jesus? I know your works, your patience, your endurance, your toil. And what do we a lot of times say when it comes to being a light to the world? I work for the Lord. I toil. I'm patient. I endure for the Lord. I've been walking the Lord for a long time. I've been serving the Lord in all kinds of ways. Translated, don't ask me to do evangelism. I serve the Lord. I toil. I'm patient. I work. I know your toil and your patient endurance and how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not, and found them to be false. I know you are enduring patiently. And all of us said, amen. I know you are enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake. Does that describe yours and my? Does it describe faith worship community? Bearing up patiently and enduring? Yeah. I know you're enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake, and you have not grown weary, but I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love that you had at first. But I have this against you that you abandoned the love that you had at first. We tend to render judgment on our early days as Christians as misguided once we get to be a little wiser and more worldly. Oh, when I was first a baby Christian, I just went out and told everybody about the gospel, but I've learned to be silent now. I just really think, I mean, I was like, I'm going to be holy, but yeah, I fixed that. My friends helped me in the church. Yeah, I'm not extreme like that. I've really gotten a whole lot more mature. Now, I mean, I wish that I had that kind of life, but I don't expect it. I have this against you that you've left the love you had at first. Remember what it's like to have your heart on fire for Jesus? It's like, I just can't get enough of Jesus. I can't wait to get up in the morning. Go spend some time with Jesus. I'm tired, done with my day. I want to go spend some time with Jesus. Life's tough. I want to spend some time with Jesus. I want to worship Jesus. I want to serve Jesus. I want to sit with Jesus. I want to learn about Jesus. That's what being a Christian's all about. That's where the banquet is. And that's what makes light come out of you instead of self-protection. It says, I know you're enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake, and you've not grown weary, but I have this against you that you've abandoned the love you had at first. Remember, therefore, from where you've fallen. Repent. And do the works you did at first. If you want to recover your first love, do what you did when you were first a Christian. It's really simple. Go be a learner. Go be that radical, extreme, crazy, condemnable person. Remember, therefore, from where you've fallen, repent and do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place. Unless you repent. Interesting threat of Jesus's. I'll take your lamp away. I'll make you to where you don't shine anymore. You don't love me, you don't shine. I'll take away the right and the privilege to represent me in the world. Take away the joy of sharing the gospel from you. I'll take away the joy of seeing other people transformed around you because you affected their lives for Jesus. It says, if you don't burn with love for me, I'm not going to let you experience what it's like to be the glove on my hand. You won't shine. So I'll just let you stay dull. That's judgment. From Jesus' view. Judgment is, I'll just let you stay dark and dull. That's what you get. I don't want us, I don't want me to experience that. That's creepy. I want to be in the middle of seeing the gospel come to people and seeing them relativized, changed, transformed, brand new, freakishly offending and bright and clumsy and big St. Bernard puppies that jump on you, lick your face, pee on your leg at the same time. I want us to be that kind of congregation. Let's go be clumsy and obvious. And let's get the gospel to people. So, there's a way to do it. Allie's going to talk about it. Go, Allie.